Man, oh man, oh man, it is freaking hot, Dave.
It's horrible hot. This whole week has been just...
105 on Wednesday?
Yeah.
106?
Yeah,
something like
Tuesday,
that.
105. I mean, we're petering down to, as they say, cooler temps, 99 possibly
93
today or something.
Yeah.
And then all next week, we're supposed to crank it back up to 97, 99. I mean, so...
No end in sight.
Really, no. I mean, usually we get some thunder bumpers, a little bit of moisture comes through. Man, it's just been
dry,
clear skies, and they got that fire out in 031 ripping right now, 60 or 80% contained.
Oh, was it that high?
They said they're supposed to be possibly 100% contained by today.
Okay.
I think it was today. So,
well, that's
still,
good news.
It's burnt a couple thousand acres.
What did I say before we started the fire episode? I said, I don't want to speak it into existence.
Jeez, man. Your fault. Your fault. So, yeah, we got that one. There's another one
up near Truckee.
Gray Eagle area. And there's one.
It's been hazy in Reno.
Yeah,
not
that's,
bad, not super bad, but
no,
it's definitely
that,
been.
I think that's that fire out there near Gray Eagle, the Thompson fire. That's that was
is that what they're calling
away.
It?
Yeah, I think so. The Thompson fire that's got started last weekend, but they've got that one under control. But yeah, it was a little hazy and it sucks.
Yeah.
Reno's now has a smoke season.
Yeah,
you know, got to squeeze it in there somewhere between summer and.
It's terrible. You know, for those of you out there listening that go, hey, newsflash, idiots, you live in the desert, it gets hot in the summer. Hey, look, I get that, but it still doesn't stop me from griping about it.
No, we have the Smith fire out there in 102 down there near Tipton Peak.
But Dave, we're...
I know, we're getting back on all that.
Getting on the wildfire thing. The show is Nevada Backcountry. Thank you to our show sponsors, Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, Hunt & House Archery Shop, and Truck Envy. We're not going to go on the wildfire thing right now, but I do have another gripe I want to get into, unless Dave is still looking at his phone. You got more on the fire before we get into Colorado or no?
Yeah, there's just, you know, it's... If anyone's got a tag in 111, 112, North Creek fire's burning. So anyway, just, you know, before you get out there, check your area, make sure what's going on in your areas, because it'll definitely have an effect on possibly camping and your hunt. So
yeah, that and the heat as well. How depressing is it that we're looking forward to, like I said, I think the high today is supposed to be 93 degrees, but how depressing is that to look forward to low 90s? I'll draw an analogy to the price of gas situation, where now if I see it like below $5 or below $4.50 a gallon, I'm excited.
Oh, I know, right?
How bad is that?
That is.
I get excited about 93 degrees.
Yeah, that you're getting excited about that. Yeah, last year at this time, paying what, $2.49?
Oh,
or not last year, but previous administration.
4 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. $2.49 a gallon. Now we're excited if it gets below $3 or $4.
Yeah.
Like $4.10, you're like, oh man, I better fill up.
It's the same way with the heat.
Yeah.
When you come from 105, when it's been over 100 all week, you're like 93.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. Let's get into Colorado, Dave.
This is going to be a good one.
I wanted to go a couple different directions with this, and I'll kind of lead in, Dave, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. But there's a bill being proposed in Colorado, essentially to ban the hunting of mountain lion, bobcat, and lynx. Initially, it was wildcats.
Yeah. The initial proposal said it was a wildcats declaration.
Too vague.
Yes, way too vague. So they just revised it to what you just said.
Mountain lion, bobcat, and lynx. Here's my issues with this, and this is going to eat up some time because Henry's going to rant a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do not like the verbiage in this. And back to when I was talking about the situation in Washington last show, same thing, howlforwildlife.org. Go check it out. Support it. Good organization. But this is one of the things that popped up. Here's the issue with this is they're using this vague language. They're trophy hunting. They're getting trophy hunting defined. So if this thing passes, this will exist in law. What's really scary about the whole thing is when you look at how they're defining trophy hunting or in quote unquote trophies.
Yeah.
How are you going to survive as a taxidermist?
Oh, you won't.
In the bill, section 2A, trophy is defined as the mount, display, or preservation of a mountain lion, bobcat, or lynx, including but not limited to the skin of the head, the entire skin, head, fur, hide, ears, legs, feet, or claws, in a lifelike representation or depiction of the animal or its body parts.
So basically, it's everything.
Right. And the way the legal system works, and this is why I don't want to veer off into like my anti-government rant, which essentially, you know, anytime you give the government an inch, it's going to exist in perpetuity for all of time. I would point to the mountain lion hunting ban by Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California.
Right.
That was supposed to be, I think it was like a 5-year deal.
Yes, 5 years.
Here we sit, what, 40-plus years later?
And it's still...
still there.
Still there.
Once you give government something, they ain't ever giving it back.
No.
So my fear with this thing and why I'm so agitated about the whole thing, take away the, you know, they're just trying to... they're going after low-hanging fruit. They want to ban mountain lion hunting and trapping, essentially, the bobcat and lynx aspect. If you get this trophy definition, if you get this stuff in law... how easy is it going to be, now it exists in Colorado state law, how easy is it going to be for their next step to be, hey, we want to ban trophy hunting, right? Because trophy hunting...
as a whole.
Yeah, as a whole. Because it gets a negative connotation, and now you already have trophy and trophy hunting defined in law. So you just substitute mountain lion, bobcat, lynx...
with
and put in elk, mule deer, bighorn sheep,
moose,
whatever.
Bighorn sheep, whatever you want. Yeah. And they've made it to the point where they don't really state anything in there in relation to size of animal. It's just merely, if you have it depicted as a
lifelike representation
of the animal, you know,
that's a trophy.
If you taxidermy anything, that's considered a trophy. Therefore, you're in violation of this particular subsection of their law, and you are going to be fined.
Yeah, you're going to be fined. They have in there, there's something, assessment of a fine. There's something, there's one of the sections has something about a like a felony.
Yeah, it starts
something.
Out with a misdemeanor, and it can move up into a felony. Basically, they're getting their claws into our hunting rights.
100%.
And you've seen it with not just hunting, but many other things
everything.
That they've gotten their fingers into, and then they just move it forward and just creep it forward. I mean, if this passes in the next 10 years or so, taxidermy will be illegal.
Absolutely, yeah.
Taxidermists will be out of a job. You can't mount fish. You can't mount ducks. You can't mount anything.
You are now a quote-unquote trophy hunter.
Yes.
And that is somehow, and it's like, what am I going to do, eat the feathers off a duck? I can't do anything with them. I might as well get it mounted if it's a cool example of the species.
My good buddy had his daughter's first animal, which was a doe. He had that mounted.
That's cool. What did he do, a shoulder mount or
he
something?
He did a shoulder mount.
That's awesome.
She wanted a shoulder mount of the first animal she harvested because she was so proud of it.
Yeah.
So she has a doe in her bedroom.
What are you going to eat off? So those that don't know, they use a foam insert. They use the hide.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, every animal we harvest is a trophy in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, like I'm not a big antler horn chaser. I do the meat. I
freezer
like the
filler.
Meat. Yeah, I fill the freezer. If I come across a real nice animal, I'm going to go for it. I've shot some record book animals, you know, of course.
I saw that one in your front yard. That's no slouch.
Yeah, no. Well, and that's where a lot of my antlers and stuff end up being in the front and backyard, and the wife hangs them out of the trees. And so they're very nice. Doesn't make me a trophy hunter because I, you know.
Happen to find an older age class, bigger horned animal.
And I whack it and I take it out of the group. But this is just going too far.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's too open. It's too broad. It allows way too deep a clause into our hunting rights. Some of this is stating in here, you know, the section one is talking about how it's, you know, you're no longer hunting for the meat. You're hunting for the
the thrill of the kill.
Thrill of the kill and the depiction of a live animal in your living room type of a thing.
Well, let's hold on. Pause right there, Dave, because I'm looking at the clock.
I know. Now you're getting me all fired up. Well, gosh darn it, Henry.
I want to go into that, and I want to go into some of the language used in the bill and just that, what's it called, anthropomorphic, when they apply human characteristics to animals.
Correct, yes.
I hate that crap.
Yeah.
So,
hey, where they basically humanize an animal.
Yeah, and some of the language in here
is very much that.
Does that. So let's take a quick break. Coming up on the show here, we're going to go one more rant section on this Colorado anti-trophy hunting bill. And then we are going to talk about some of the hunting in the heat, caring for meat in the heat, because antelope is starting in
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yeah, archery antelope. And then right after that, it's just dominoing into
the rest of the hunts. Cow elk and then
bull elk and more antelope.
And it doesn't look like it's going to cool off.
Yeah, deer starts. Yeah, so it's going to...
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
All right, so stay tuned, everyone. The stations, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, and the show is Nevada Backcountry. Thanks for hanging in there over the break. If you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry, and you are listening to 99.1 KKFT and 92.3 KSVL. Trophy hunting, Dave. You were just starting to get rolling.
Yes, get rolling. Colorado is...
Well, they're calling it the trophy hunting ban.
Correct.
But right now, it just applies to mountain lion, bobcat, and lynx. Three.
And a lot of the reason I think they're doing that is it's kind of like you were saying earlier.
Low-hanging fruit. Yep.
The hunters and the commissions are going to be like, okay, let's give them this one. It's not a big deal. The issue is... Like we were saying, that gives them claws into our rights.
100% it
does. From there, they just move it along. They'll move it to small game. They'll move it to big game. They'll move it to everything. You're not going to be able to...
Here's the one that's near and dear to my heart, and the next one they always go after. There are plenty of examples. Like in Nevada, they went for the coyote killing contest, right?
Right.
Low-hanging fruit. You know, even you talk to hunters and say, I don't agree with that, whatever. It's a low-hanging fruit.
Right.
The next one on the chopping block is always archery.
Yes.
It is looked at as barbaric and cruel, you know, and they'll always trot out the picture of some poor deer with like an arrow broken off in its shoulder.
Right.
And a festering wound.
Or running around with an arrow in its hind end.
Yeah.
Or a goose. You always see pictures of geese with arrows through them.
This bow hunter shot. No, it wasn't a bow hunter. It was a couple kids screwing around doing something stupid, shooting geese with a, you know, anyway, I don't want to go down that, but that's. Here's why I get so passionate and fired up about this stuff is because I know what comes after this.
Yes.
And it's always archery. And then, you know, if they get that, hey, then they're going to go for this. And it just never, ever, ever stops with them.
They have an agenda. There's a plan there.
It's absolutely.
It's not just doing this and being like, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
No, it goes, okay, on to stage
start
two.
Start here and then
on
end
to stage
here.
Two. Yeah. A lot of this is also probably coming from the advent of social media.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's posting every picture of their hunts and their kills. And some of them don't do it real respectfully, or they take a picture of the animal and the gut piles right next to them. And it's just like, some of this stuff is what is provoking.
You're giving them ammo.
Completely. Yeah. That's the same issue with the coyote killing contests.
Yeah. It's the optics of it.
It's the optics of it. Yeah. Showing a picture of 25 coyotes in front of your truck and you're standing on them, probably not a good photo to take because that's just fuel for the fire.
Yeah.
They're using that kind of stuff to take to these commissions, to these wildlife boards, to the legislature.
Back up for a second. You can take the photo, right? And if it goes on the wall at your house of you on a pile of 30 dead coyotes, who gives a rip, right?
Right.
It's putting it out for public consumption.
Yeah, Facebook,
Instagram. I'm not like a thin-skinned dude. I could care less, man. You want to go kill 100 coyotes, stack them up, wear the skull around for a week, get drunk? I don't care. I don't care what you do with it. Thing's dead, right? But it's that posting it is where the general public gets involved.
Exactly.
And that's where we get hosed.
And exactly. Yeah, because then they use that. They bring that to, once you put it on social media, it's free game for anybody.
Yeah.
There's no copyright on that stuff. It is free.
They screenshot
game.
That, use it however they want.
Yeah. Yep. So, and I think that's where a lot of these attacks on our rights are occurring now. And they're just happening more and more and more and more. And the big thing is we as hunters and outdoorsmen, we need to be a lot more vocal. A lot of the anti-hunting groups, we're talking 1% of the population. We're a very small group.
Yep.
But they scream so loud.
Well, and I got news for you. They got the money, too. When you look at the total, even if you lump in Safari Club International, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, lump all the hunting conservation groups together, it's still like an eighth of what the Humane Society, PETA, what they bring in. They got the money.
Greenpeace and all that.
Because they play on people's emotions. And back to the bill, that's what I wanted to point out in this, and this is why I get so agitated. The very first paragraph, these provisions are intended to minimize needless orphaning of these animals.
Yeah. I know, right? Is that just like grabbing the heartstrings?
It's like, oh, yeah.
You know, they're
Bambi.
They are.
They do this stuff on purpose.
They're just wordsmithing this, like orphaning. Come on.
We had an anti-hunter, I think, when we first started the show that on Facebook, and I think both you and I kind of went at it with him and then just went, yeah, this ain't changing this dude's opinion. I hate when people apply these very human concepts, emotions, and stuff to animals.
Characteristics
to animals.
To animals.
It doesn't exist.
No.
At all.
No. They turn the animal into basically a family member.
Oh, yeah. That's what I want to point out in this is that kind of language exists throughout this thing. And again, it plays on people's emotions and they think, oh my God, this poor little orphaned, whatever, this mountain lion cub, I would hate to see that thing orphaned. Well, look, man, that cub doesn't know any different. If it's weaned, guess what? It's going, man. It's on its own. It's killing stuff. It's eating. For a wild animal, all that exists is, am I taking in enough calories to survive?
Right.
And am I protecting myself? Am I getting killed?
Right.
And that's it.
Because they mention in here the limited to the inhumane and unsporting hunting or killing of mountain lions, bobcats, and lynx. And it goes on and talks about.
Who gets to be the arbiter of that?
Obviously, they're trying to push themselves to be that. Then they go on to the having a period of time and then the calendar year, it'll be unlawful for any person to hunt or kill a mountain lion, bobcat, or lynx by any means, including but not limited to by firearm, trapping, baiting, electronic devices, which that means dogs.
Yep.
You can't have, you won't be able to have those.
Like the collar
GPS,
I run on my dog,
right, the
Garmin
GPS
one.
Collaring units on your animal to go and harvest another animal. So that electronic devices, bow and arrow, or by the use of one or more dogs. So basically, they're covering everything.
Yeah. And again, I hate that. Who gets a, let me just string together a coherent sentence here. But if it's legal, who gets to sit on the throne of deciding whether or not that's a, what they call it, inhumane?
Yeah, inhumane and unsporting hunting.
Yeah. How are they the arbiters of what's inhumane or unsporting? And I would, again, I hate that, inhumane.
Right.
We're going to use that with, really? With hunting? Like, we're not talking about war crimes here, okay?
Right. Well, and then they just keep moving the dialogue along.
Oh,
They started out as trophy hunting, like mounting it, presenting it, all this
define
kind of stuff,
this,
defining then, all of that. But then they just keep going down into these subsections and it gets deeper and deeper and deeper into this particular proposal where now they're stating in this little section here, this little section three, it said, it will be unlawful for any person at any time to follow or chase a mountain lion, bobcat, or lynx.
Follow me on this, right? Because they have in the bill, there's a list of exclusions. And one of the things on there is for like state agencies to research the animals. Like that's not part of it. You can still do that. But you read paragraphs like that, and they're very specific about, at the end of it, for the purpose of killing
right.
the animal. Let's say you got a problem cat.
Yes, exactly. I was just going to bring that up.
So they have an exclusion in there for the state agencies to be allowed to follow them for the purpose of study. Paragraph you just read, if you get rid of that, now a state agency can't follow a problem cat and kill it.
No.
Can't trap it.
Right.
Put it down.
Well, I mean, you've got Wildlife Services who goes around and they deal with... That's their job is to deal with, you know, trouble...
Problem
predators that are going and affecting ranchers' herds, harassing neighborhoods, things like that. They go out, they take care of these particular trouble animals. Like, there's nothing in here saying that anything about removing troubled animals from particular situations.
No.
So this is just like a full-on ban.
Look, for those of you listening, this is why I get on these soapboxes about this stuff, because I used to honestly kind of stay out of this stuff, and I just thought, oh, yeah, that's some, like, lunatic.
Right.
That's some person who lives in the big city. They don't know which end of the gun to point at an animal. This is never going to get passed, yada, yada, yada. I thought the Colorado the wolf thing was so insane. I thought there's absolutely no way that's going to pass.
Right.
But it did.
It did.
So now that was kind of a wake-up call for me, like, whoa, hang on one second. So even though on the surface this seems insane to me sitting in Reno, Nevada, there are people in Denver that are going to vote for this.
Oh, without a doubt.
And that's what
Denver
freaks me out.
Denver is like a mini Los Angeles or Portland.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Denver has flipped that fast or
oh,
that
yeah.
hard.
Man, I'm ready to take a shot of bourbon and fight somebody in the parking lot, Dave. But we got to take another break.
Let's get all Yellowstone on somebody.
Yeah, I got to take another break. When we come back, let's end on a lighter note. Let's talk a little bit about the heat, hunting in the heat, especially this antelope stuff starting in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Stay tuned, everybody.
Oh, man, we got a little bit, there was some extra ranting over the break there. You are listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk
with
me and Dave. And
shouldn't have done a double pour.
Oh, man, yeah, exactly. I was, after that last segment, I was like, all right, I'm going to find somebody to know. That stuff, I'm passionate about it. I was not always that way. I was on one of those long drives, a hunt with my dad. And I was always kind of like, whatever, man. Anti-hunters are weird. Those people, like, you can't have a conversation with them, basically. I don't get involved in this stuff, and this is why. And he started in with the same thing I laid out there on the, you don't understand, like, what their budgets are, how many people are involved in it. Hunters as a whole, like, we pale in comparison. And I thought, there's no way. Not a chance, Dad. You're wrong. And when you got like a 15-hour drive, it's like, well, I'm going to sit here and let's look this stuff up on my phone. Sure enough, he was not kidding, man. And these are hypotheticals, but let's say between all the big hunting organizations, if they bring in, we'll say, $27 million combined in donations, and that's their working capital.
Right.
You know, you can put a one in front of that number for the anti-hunting organizations.
Yeah.
The divide is that big.
Yeah.
And that was when I started changing my opinion and going, yeah, you know, to hell with that. I'm going to speak up and speak out when I have the chance. Now, here we go again, Dave. I'm looking at my watch. My heart rate's going back up. So I'm going to stop. Let's talk about the heat
hunting in it. I mean, both of us have done it. We've both archery hunted and we've definitely
Like doing it.
It gets hot. It's sometimes it can get really miserable, especially when it's in the 90s. And you know, our average temp's supposed to be like 92 right now, and we're well above that the last week or so. And going into the next 10 days, the outlook is high 90s, you know, hit 100 here and there, but high 90s. So we got archery antelope starting, archery deer starting, archery bull going to be happening at the end of August. What do you do with your meat?
Well, tell your story. You got a good story, a friend of yours or someone you know.
Yeah, somebody I know went and helped a buddy on an antelope hunt. This was a couple years back, mid-90 degree type of a week. And his buddy put a shot on an antelope. It wasn't a great shot. and they found the antelope about an hour and a half or so later, finally found it. Meat was done. In an hour and a half out there, laying out in the open sun, he said the thing was just, it was done. As soon as they started to try to skin it
that
and process
smell,
it, he
yeah.
goes, the smell, the color of the hindquarters, the meat, the whole animal was garbage.
And that's mid-90s.
He said it was like mid-90s, you're reaching the upper 90s, like harvesting that animal and getting that animal opened up, cooled, and in a cooler.
On ice, yeah.
On ice, in a cooler or something is huge. You know, the last thing you want to do is be taking a chance on eating some meat that you're like, well, it's got a little bit of a smell, but it's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to want to eat it.
No, even hamburgered up, it's still going to taste like...
Not good.
Not good.
Here's the thing about, and I know you've killed antelope with a bow.
Yes.
Antelope hunting with a bow, I won't say freaks me out as hyperbolic. It doesn't freak me out. There is that margin for error on that stuff.
Yeah.
Where if that sucker goes and you don't have good blood trail, now thank God most antelope hunting is out in the wide open. You can watch it forever. There is something to be said for those early season antelope hunts. Man, just pin it through both shoulders with like a 270 or something. Sucker drops right there, goes over, you're done. Immediately start processing it. I do not put in for the archery antelope hunts for that reason. I put in for the any legal weapon stuff.
You definitely need to know where you're shooting.
Be confident in that shot.
Make sure you're hitting both pump houses.
Yep.
Or hitting the pump house and both the lungs, or at least both the lungs. Antelope aren't going to go too far after that because you know, they're the fastest North American land mammal out there. I mean, they can reach speeds of 60, 65 miles an hour and
hold it.
And hold it. I mean, you whack them in the guts and they're going to be a mile away in no time. And you're going to be like, did you see where he went? Yeah, it's a challenge because once that animal's on the ground, a weird thing I did on my last antelope hunt was I carried one of those shade structures.
Oh, it's not a bad call, Dave.
It wasn't. I mean, it was kind of lumpy and you know, cumbersome on the machine, you know, carrying it's like, hey, where are you going? To the beach?
One of those pop-up things. Yeah,
just one of those easy ups.
Okay, yeah, yep.
And so got the animal, shot it, dropped it wide open. And there wasn't a tree, there wasn't anything anywhere, no shade whatsoever. I created my own. I grabbed the Easy Up, popped it up real quick. I mean, it wasn't a big one. It was a fairly smaller one and ended up with some shade. And then I put the animal up on the rack on the ATV, get it off the ground from the heat from the ground. And I mean,
a little air circulation, doing A-okay.
And, you know, had it in the cooler, you know, at least had it in the bags within, I don't know, probably 30 minutes or so, 40 minutes.
It doesn't take long to process once they're on there. Yeah.
But it's definitely, there's a pucker factor.
Yeah. It's a race against, second that arrow comes off the bow or bullet leaves the barrel, it's like, it's a race against the clock now.
I mean, some of the stuff you do, what do you do for?
Same thing.
Like deer and antelope and anything that you're hunting in the heat.
Yeah. Cow elk, any of that.
That's a tough one.
Well, cows, usually at least with cow elk stuff, there's some sort of tree, something nearby.
Yeah,
generally the terrain you're in.
Near some trees that you can hang get the meat up in and get some shade.
Antelope, not so much. And mule deer, oftentimes, you don't always know. But back to your thing, I carry a sil nylon, like a tarp that I also sleep under if I'm way in the backcountry. But that two trekking poles, you anchor one end with your pack, put the two trekking poles. Now you got like a lean-to.
Yeah.
You can get some shade on it. But we've talked before, man, the biggest thing, Dave, is getting that rear quarter.
Yep.
Those butterfly open that meat to the bone. If you got to take a little stick or something to hold it open, but it's that getting the meat off the bone.
Get the meat off the bone.
Get it out of the sun. Get it laid out.
Especially when you're talking an elk where they've got they have a significant amount of meat on that hind quarter. Butterflying that hind quarter is huge on getting that stuff cooled down and opening that chest, and again, finding a stick, or if you have an arrow, get your arrow in there and pop that chest wide open and let that heat get out and let the air, if there's a breeze, get that thing cooled off and then get that hide off.
So I haven't carried an Easy Up. I got a room just down the hall full of station easy ups.
Oh, there
That'd
you go.
That'd be a good public. Yeah, processing meat under a 99.1.
Yeah, easy up. Yeah, it just happened to be I had it at camp, and we were up in 034, and just oh my god, it was so bloody hot. There were so many times I'm like, let's just call it. This is gnarly.
Was that the hunt you were sitting in the blind trying to collect so you could fill up a water bottle with sweat first?
It was a Dixie cup.
A Dixie cup.
Yeah. Okay. By midday, we were both sitting in our underwear, which were drenched.
Yeah.
And we were trying to see who could fill a Dixie cup up
with sweat.
With the sweat dripping off our nose. And that was the only time I sat in a blind.
It's like cutting weight for wrestling or something.
After that, I was like, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm sitting in a blind in this heat for 16 hours. Not going to happen. I'm going to
spot. A lot of people do it, man.
Yeah, I'm going to spot and stalk, or I'm not going to get an animal. I am not sitting in a blind. That was it. I mean, it was the most uncomfortable and least satisfying hunting day I've ever had in my life. Was that day. Was that day.
Dude, I can't imagine sitting there trying to fill up a Dixie cup with sweat. Yeah. I've done a lot of weird stuff in my day, Dave. I've never done anything like that.
It was like sitting in a freaking sauna.
Oh,
it
man.
Was miserable.
Oh, okay, so your friend that put a poor shot, the meat was ruined, was that archery or rifle?
That was rifle.
Oh, it was rifle, and he made a poor shot.
Yeah, it was a late August hunt.
Where I was going to go with this is pay attention as you're going into an area. Look around. We have a tendency as hunters to hyperfixate on, well, okay, this is the terrain feature I'm looking for, where I'm going to put my blind or where I'm going to glass from or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, during these early season hunts, it's worth it to look around and go, okay, this is the last stand of trees. If I get an antelope down, I know I can make it back to here, get the thing hanging in a tree.
Yeah.
I might be hunting 3 miles down the road that way, but pay attention to some of that stuff. Hey, here's a creek. Even if I can, you know, that's big in Alaska. If you can get it in a trash bag, get it dunked in a creek, you don't want the water getting on the meat.
Right.
But at least get it cooled off in a creek or something. Like, pay attention to some of that stuff. And thank God I have not been in that situation where poor shot, too hot, meat gets ruined.
Henry, what do you always carry when you're out in the field?
Yeah.
If it's not in your UTV or your quad, if it's in your truck, you know, within proximity of where you're hunting, what do you always have in case for the moment you do have an animal on the ground?
I'm going to leave you with a cliffhanger. It's called a commercial break.
Oh.
And then when we come back, I'll get
Henry
into that.
Henry will answer the question.
Yeah, I'll answer the question. So, hey, go refill the coffee. Don't go anywhere. I'll answer Dave's question. One thing I do not go out without when hunting in the heat. It's all coming up on Nevada Backcountry. I hate to leave everybody on a cliffhanger, but I had to do it. We had to take a commercial break. Thank you to the show sponsors, Legacy Sports International, Hunt and House Archery Shop, and Truck Envy. Right before we went to break there, Dave, you asked me one thing I always bring with me hunting in the heat.
Yeah, when you're hunting in the heat, what are some of the things or the main thing you bring with you if you end up harvesting an animal?
To make sure that meat
doesn't go bad.
So we were talking over the break there, and some of this stuff, I like backpack hunting. That's what I prefer to do. And obviously, like, I can't answer that with like a 70-quart Yeti cooler, because I ain't carrying a 70-quart Yeti cooler.
No.
But just the basics inside a pack, and this doesn't matter if you're just hunting, road hunting or whatever, in the pack, in my kill kit always, I've got a big contractor bag to lay the meat on. I've got that Sil nylon tarp. I carry the contractor bag, so I know I got something to lay the meat out on. And then it serves double duty, right? Because as soon as you get those suckers in meat bags, if you are, let's say, cow, elk, or mule deer, and you got a creek nearby, you can then take the game bags, throw everything in that contractor's bag, tie a knot, put it in a creek to keep it cool while you make rounds, run into the truck, and pack and stuff out. Depending on how far
out.
So those would be the two, Dave, I'd say always. And then in the truck, I've always got one cooler that's full of nothing but bottles frozen. Then there is a cooler of the flat pack. Yeti used to kind of have the market cornered on them, but you know what I'm talking about? The things you freeze and it's a flat thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they're encased in plastic or something, yep. like a gel that freezes. Yeah.
Exactly. I got those stacked in the other cooler. So that's what's in the truck always, always, always. And like I said, if I get something down between the trash bag, the tarp.
Usually get it out of there. Yeah. So on my coolers, my large coolers, my
What are you
coolers,
doing for ice in them?
So I do the same thing. Okay. I freeze a ton of ice, you know, block ice. If not, I'll go pick up some block ice. I built these like screens. Then I place those in the cooler, and then underneath the screens go the ice. So that when I put the animal, the pieces of the animal in there, if it's boned out or hindquarters or what have you, when I stick it in there, I'm putting the animal on
above the ice
yep. on the racks that I built.
Yeah.
The 160 quart coolers.
Well, you got that giant grizzly one.
Yeah, the one that I won at the Muley Foundation.
Yeah.
That is pretty sweet. But yeah, so I'll usually take four of those big coolers.
Okay.
Two of them will be full of ice. The other two will be empty.
Gotcha.
And those will have the racks in them.
I got to check out your rack system. My Yeti cooler, it was back when they used to come with that wire basket in them.
Yeah.
Where you flip it upside down, turn it sideways, it sits in the bottom.
Yeah.
So same concept, but it came with it. I have noticed now it's getting rarer for coolers to come with that basket in them.
Yeah, they don't anymore. I think it's now you have to
cost savings or something.
You can still buy them, but I think you have to buy them online as a separate option. But
I mean, I have an Apple iPhone, but God dang it, do I hate the Apple business model where every little accessory is an add-on that you got to purchase.
Right.
So cooler companies, if you're listening, don't use
don't
the Apple business model.
Yeah. The one kicker with my coolers, though, and I had to fix them myself, was the sides are all insulated. Did you ever notice on a lot of those, like Igloo coolers, not the Yetis or the ones
Grizzlies,
or those really high-end ones? But the lids aren't insulated. They're hollow.
You told me that. Yes.
You
got a workaround, right?
Yeah, I drilled holes in it, drilled a few holes in there, and then got that
expanding foam stuff.
Yeah, the whatever the heck it's called at Home Depot. They got 50
gap sealer,
different versions of it. And I just stuck the hose in there and filled up the lid, insulate the lid, because that heat from that plastic will just melt the ice in a heartbeat. And I've noticed with...
And of all the sides to not insulate,
is
the one sitting in the sun.
Seriously, the one that's taking up all the sun? But so once I did that, the ice in some of my Igloo coolers would last 2-3 days longer.
Oh, I bet.
Instead of just becoming a pile of cold water.
Yep. So. Even with the high-end stuff, Dave, I'll tell you. Moving blankets.
Yes, I have those. I carry them and put them over the top.
When I leave the truck to pack in wherever or what, you know, I'm covering everything with moving blankets.
Slide it underneath the tree and put the moving blankets over the top of the coolers. Yeah.
Keep that ice longer. What do you carry in the pack to mitigate the heat? Similar to what I do?
Yeah, real similar to what you do. You know, I got my meat bags in there and my kill kit. I generally have my walking sticks or my poles, so I can use those to help if I need to open up the chest cavity and stuff. But pretty much the same stuff. I carry 2 5x6 tarps.
Okay, two of them.
Yeah, and I've always got the same contractor's bags that I can cut open and lay them out, and that's where I'll put the meat. I usually use the white, not the black bags, because those things get really hot.
Yeah, they do.
So
that's
a good
point.
I'll use the white ones. I'll use the white, like, kitchen bags. I usually carry a small roll of those with me, and I'll lay the meat on those. You know, so real similar to what you're doing. And then just, you know, do my best to get it back to camp and in the coolers or hanging in a tree.
Yes,
nice, cool spot in a tree where you might catch a breeze. But with the heat that we're having right now, it's so important to make sure you've got a good cooling system ready. I'm not quite as advanced as a buddy of mine who actually, he bolted a chest freezer in his enclosed trailer. I have my enclosed trailer that I converted into a little, you know, hunting trailer, but with a shower and stuff in it. But I've thought about that. I'm like, man, that's freaking cool. He fires it up and he gets it freezing cold. He's got his ice and everything in there, unplugs it. It's already in his enclosed trailer. Then he goes hunting, and then he'll plug it into his generator just to keep the dang thing cold. And it's
Yes.
That is absolutely genius.
I met somebody with something similar, except he had solar panels, so he kept it running off the solar panels, and he could fire up the generator at night, too.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Dylan Friedenberg. If you were listening, tell a sidebar story real quick. Met this kid. We were out elk hunting, or kid. He was a little younger than I am. Former professional snowboarder, decided that he wanted to take up bow hunting. My dad and I met him. He was going in alone on his very first hunt for elk, hunting solo.
Oh,
and that's,
wow.
And so I don't know if the, maybe in his brain, it was like, well, this is less risky than like snowboarding big mountains in Alaska. Like I know the woods, I'm good.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to him. And what's cool is we met him and he had a trailer like yours and he had a little chest freezer bolted into it.
Yeah.
And he had like bunk beds against the wall.
Yeah.
He had solar panels on top.
Yeah. Like mine. Yeah.
Yeah. The and then a generator so he could fire it up at night when he was back. But he was doing like 3-4 day rips.
Oh, wow.
Out there, out of a backpack, and then would come back to his base camp trailer. But he had a bolted down chest freezer.
Yeah.
I wish I had taken a better look at Dylan's setup when we met him. I just remember thinking of the novelty of that. Like, well, man, that's pretty dang cool. You got a chest freezer in here.
Yeah, maybe I can try to reconfigure my little kitchenette area and have that chest freezer be part of my countertop or something. Who knows?
No, hey, you could glue like a cutting board to the top or something. And
bolt it in there.
If you are listening right now and you go, hey, you guys missed the biggest tip or trick as far as meat care or just hunting in the heat, send us a text. The number is 775-884-9910.
Or if you've got a great idea, share it with us so we can share it with everyone else that's out there.
And we sincerely appreciate all the feedback we get. And I love the listener interaction. Some of this stuff that we talk about on the show, it wasn't like I came up with it. I hunted with somebody at some point that did it. And I went, man, I'm going to tuck that one away. So, hey, that's how we learn. That's how we get better as a community of hunters. And not to end on a down note, but man, this Colorado thing, get involved, people. Go sign the petition, howlforwildlife.org. You know, if you think you can do the ostrich with its head in the sand, this stuff is, it's already at our doorstep. They're going to keep pushing it in Nevada. Thank you for spending time on your Sunday with us.
All right, everybody, you guys have yourself a good day. Stay cool. Next up is Tom Gresham with Gun Talk.